Welcome to another episode of The Suspendables with funny man Jungle Jim Jerome and retired NHL star Russ Cortinel.
Here's Cortinel. He scores! Cortinel speeding in!
Each week they unleash their raw, stripped-down, unfiltered opinions on all things hockey and maybe other stuff too. Who knows? Inside stories, absolutely. Outrage, guaranteed. Offside, for sure. And always plenty of laughs. Strap in. The Suspendables is coming at you right now.
Well, there we go. Okay, so that was easy. Hi, folks. It's Jungle Jimmy. Okay, Jungle Jimmy Jerome coming at you right now. Sean Payton gave me the stuck with the Jimmy. I really like the Jimmy, Rusty. This is another episode of The Suspendables, and we've got a guest. Okay. By the way, thanks a lot for listening last week. Sean Payton was on. As you know, I get a lot of emails from people saying, hey, Jimmy, how come you're taking so much shit from Russ all the time? Okay. Why are you letting this guy pound you like a fucking post all the time? And so I've been waiting for guests, you know, to come on who are going to just get on and set everyone straight about Rusty. I thought it might be Sean. But he was just far too funny. One of our best interviews yet. And then Russ texted me, goes, how about we get on my buddy PJ Stock? And I'm going, absolutely. Because I remember PJ. I forget where we met, but we've met a few times over the last little while. And I say, this, mark the calendar, this may be the guy that sets Russ straight, man. I'm hoping. PJ Stock, how are you, brother?
Oh. You're muted.
How's that?
There you go.
Okay. I didn't want to see. That's Russ. That's Russ muting my mic ahead of time because he knows what's coming. And sorry. And by the way, Jungle, the last episode, I know you were excited about Peyton calling you Jimmy, but I've heard over the shows there's Jimbo, there's Jimmy, there's Jimmer, there's Jungle, there's you were excited about Jimmy. So am I going with Jimmy?
No, Jungle then. Let's go. It's unique to you. Let's go to Jungle. Jungle was my nickname.
But Sean Payton called him Jimmy. And then after a story Jim shared about videotaping Gretzky's
Tiger.
Golf course.
Oh, Gretzky, Gretzky.
No, Michael Jordan, in fact, and putting it on social media. Yeah. He quickly became Jim for about 20 minutes.
He quickly became mud. Gretz invited me to his course, Grove 23, the Michael Jordan golf course, just to recap. And there was one rule, PJ, no cameras. Okay, no cam. That was the only rule. Okay, you can wear anything you want. You can play 50 guys in a group. You can steal wine. You can rip them off from cigars. You can buy anything you want. You can say anything you want. One rule, no cameras. So what I thought I'd do is pull my camera out, okay, on the 10th tee to take a picture of Michael. Anyway, I'm over there.
You lasted 10 holes, though. I think
that's the 10 holes, and I got forgiven by Gretz. Anyway, great to have you on, man.
Thank you.
For those of you who live in a cave, PJ, of course, played in the NHL. I have you down from about the late 90s to the early 2000s, 6-7 year career.
Stand up.
And now you're doing the broadcasting thing, and you do a lot of it. Okay, you do a lot of it. I didn't know that. I'm guessing French was your first language. You're fully bilingual.
I'm not. I don't speak either of them. I try to say like Spanish is my first one, just so I can kind of have an excuse because I destroy both languages.
Well,
you
live in that world as I did, where if you're a broadcaster, people have to realize that every single day you walk into work, you're wondering if you're going to get fired or not. Okay. That's just the broadcast world. Joe Buck. Okay. Troy Aikman today, PJ.
Official. Right,
65 mil for Buck.
Wow.
95 million for Aikman. Okay.
How many years?
I don't know. Stevie might know, but.
I think that's probably 3 years because I saw the number that was throwing around for Aikman. No, maybe not 30, probably a 4-year deal, but still it is amazing what, you know, we are talking hockey and follow hockey. And, you know, my parents, when she doesn't know any other sport, but she brings up any time a player, like I'm in Montreal, so the big thing is Carey Price and a $10.5 million contract.
Right.
And it's so, when in the world of sports, it's so minute compared to baseball guys making $40 million. The football guys, the people calling the football now are making $20 million a year. It's just, it's those sports are kind of monsters. And I'm hoping hockey one day gets there.
Yeah.
I don't, preferably while I'm still commentating on it.
Well, it's like this. We're like this. You go, Aikman. You go, man. You go, Mahomes, all these guys. So, first of all, how do you, you and Rusty are old friends.
Well, Rusty, hold on a second. Let me set the record straight. So I, so there's a little bit of an age gap, like 30 years, right? So I had a girl that I really liked in high school. Uh-oh. And so she had a picture of Russ in her locker. It started back then.
Why?
Because I don't know why she liked him. I'm looking at his picture too. He had the long hair, but he looks cross-eyed in his team photo for the Habs. I don't know which one this is. But...
Oh fuck, that one! I'm super hungover.
Yeah.
I know exactly what picture you're talking about. Everyone asked me about it. I just had Melissa Whitworth say to me, "There's this really weird picture of you that we looked up online. You're in Montreal, Canadian. You look like an assassin." I just got in like an hour before that picture was taken. We had a couple days off, and but I forgot about the picture taking moment, and I'm super hungover in that picture. Actually, I'm probably still drunk.
Yeah. Wow, that's a shocker, Russ. Wow, that is a real shocker.
So the hate started way back then. It started back then. So, and it's just continued because we've competed in different things, you know. He's tried to come back on his figure skating shows multiple times, but again, we battle there.
Yeah.
So
it was rigged. It was so freaking rigged.
I knew he'd say that. Yeah. No, it wasn't. It wasn't.
It was
just shitty when that thing happened.
It's true.
First time ever, his partner was trying to vote him off the show.
Yeah.
behind the scenes, they had to come in and be like, "Hey, you can't keep voting against your."
I wonder why they kept falling on purpose.
Yeah. It's what we're talking about. Of course, is Battle of the Blades. It was a CBC deal many years ago, where NHL players teamed up with figure skaters, and Russ got picked for that. PJ got picked for that. And it was the process of elimination. All you want to do is not be cut first, PJ, in that thing.
That's right.
I'm sorry, Russ.
No, come on, Russ. I can't remember. You must have made it pretty far. How far?
No.
I the first year I did it two years ago.
I know. Don't worry. I know. I don't think I know.
First year I got cut first, and then what? The second year I made it two or three spots, but I didn't get cut first. Thank fucking God.
Oh yeah,
that was embarrassing.
I helped the show out a couple of years ago as a producer, just more or less finding skaters. And, you know, convincing them about, it's an amazing experience. It is awesome. Yeah. Like we had an amazing group. We had just a super fun time. Right. And we, you know, there's so much stuff that you see on air but it's a minute skate, 2 minute skate, but the week building up to that is just the blast. And we had a real great group. It was so fun. It's such a great experience, but I worked on the producer side of it, trying to convince the guys, you know, to do it. And you know, it's just the nervousness of doing something that is completely, you know, you've never done it before. And you have an ego when you don't want to get mocked or embarrassed by doing a figure skating thing. But in the world of hockey, the figure skating was the Russ Courtnell to the PJ Stock, right? It was like the enemy. It was the enemy. So, and I convinced myself, listen, here's the deal, guys. It's awesome. You're going to learn so many things. You're going to hang out with great people. The only thing you don't want to do is get kicked off first.
Yeah.
That's the only thing you don't want to do.
That the only TJ. Thing. Keep going, baby.
Oh my God. No, it's known as a Russ Courtnell. Don't pull a Russ Courtnell.
Yeah, don't do the Rusty Courtnell. Don't get cut in the first thing.
You know what was funny, Jimmy, is we all stayed in the same hotel in Toronto.
Right.
And we'd go get coffee right around 10 o'clock before we go off to the rink. And we're in Starbucks in line for coffee, and it was coffee break for all the downtown workers. And all these women would be in there, and they would go, "Oh my God, you're on this show, my favorite show. But yeah. they were fans of figure skating, not hockey.
Right.
And so all of a sudden, we all became these people who followed that sport. We became their, you know, they had their favorites and all this. Sure. But it was so weird as a hockey player to now be recognized as a figure skater. And they're asking us all these questions. It was hilarious. Yeah. But it was a great time, great experience. You know, and somebody has to go first.
Hell of an idea.
It is. It's a kind of Canadian version of Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah, exactly. It's Kevin Albright, I think, who came up with that idea.
Yeah.
You know, in the day and age of reality shows, right, that since, you know, Survivor was the first reality show, and now there's 7 billion of them, you know, Real Housewives and all this other stuff. But that thing was really cool.
There's two things, Jimmy, that are Jimbo or Jungle. Jimmer. So I know Russ is golfing with Gretz and Michael Jordan and everyone in California. He gets into Canada every now and then, but it's funny. It's true. Like I've been on Hockey Night in Canada and I've played professional hockey. And the only thing I get recognized now is like for my figure skating. Like it's just kind of, and I was terrible at that. Like I can only imagine how bad I was at the other two, that's what they're remembering me from. But as Russ says, it is the show. It's the power of that show. Yeah. And it is kind of like Canada, you know, the Olympics and all those single sports that they watch up and build up to the Olympics every 4 years. And one of them is figure skating. There's so many fans across Canada. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, cool.
That was awesome.
I'll tell you what, you're a lovable guy, man. And I'll tell you why. You know, when you look at we get a celebrity on like yourself, we get an NHL player on like yourself, and you're going to go through.
Oh, go easy on the celebrity.
No, keep going. You're doing well. You're doing well.
Shut up, Russ. Okay. Shut up. Okay. And then you'll Wikipedia the guy, or, you know, stuff. Right. And it'll be about, you know, there'll be stories about, you know, his hockey career, whether he won cups or not, how long he played, penalty minutes, all this shit. But yours, you go to it. I said, I think PJ, okay, I think he submitted all the stuff he wanted people to know about him, and all of it on there, okay, all these stories. Nothing to do with hockey. Okay? Yeah.
Well, because it's fucking hockey stats you could fit in a fortune cookie.
Oh, no. No, Russ. No.
Hey, okay. It was a different time. It was a different time. You know, different coaching, different systems.
Sure.
I scored on Brodeur Top Shelf. I don't want to bring that up. Let me see what else. I know this is on radio, but what else can I bring out back here? That's about it. I have a Pee Wee medal.
We got video. We'll put it up. We'll put some video up of it.
The trading deadline's coming up, and all these guys, PJ and all the guys who he works with, are always trying to get the scoops, right? And you see them on air with their phones. They're like, they're really looking at their phones, checking their phones. So I text PJ, and I don't know how many years ago, and I go, I got one for you. Got you a scoop. And he's going like, I'm fucking laughing so hard because I'm watching him on TV and I'm sending him notes. And I said, yeah, this is coming from Gretz. So it's
oh no.
And then before they come back on air, I'm like, no, I'm just kidding. He goes, don't do that.
It's the world, the media world, and I don't get this. They're so into the who's the first person to get it out.
I
remember poor Aaron Ward. I don't know if you did this to Wardo, but Aaron Ward on TSN, they have like four areas set up, and like these, you know, these guys are breaking down trades while they're not done talking. This other group goes and they talk about potential trades, and then you talk about being traded, and there's all these moments. And when something pops up, you know, Aaron Ward was on another block, but ran into this other, I got one. Right. And he said what the trade was, and he got it wrong. That's that day. The stations and the bosses want you just to get it, you know, just get it as fast as you can. And it's not fair to anyone.
Yeah.
Breaking news.
Yeah.
You know, but funny, you mentioned Gretz before, picture behind me, him and I are tight. What I love about Gretz is whenever he sends a text, he always finishes at 99. I don't know if he does with you guys. But when I respond to him, I respond, hey, great. Hope you're well. 28,
20, 44, 42,
35.
That's good.
That's fabulous. Yeah. Who is this? Yeah, that's so funny.
His license number.
Yeah, one of the What are you doing now? First of all, I loved you on the Olympics. That was great. There was only three of you. I finally saw a panel. Okay. We're talking about broadcasting. Yeah. And I love the NHL. I love, you know, HNIC and all that stuff that I watch. But there's 7,000 people now. Okay.
Yeah.
On the table, on the desk, you know, the play-by-play guy. You did a cool thing in the Olympics. It was just you and another girl and a host, right?
Yep. That was it. We just kind of, we went away from what hockey has become. You know, I look at TNT and basketball, and I think that's the best show out there when you break down any of the sports shows. I think basketball, it's, you know, Shaq, mm-hmm. Barkley, they're just so personality, but they're not ever really breaking down plays, right? They're having the conversations that you and I are having at home. Or, mm-hmm. And if there's nothing that's going on in a half of basketball, which is very often, they play, what is it, 82 games a year? I think they play like hockey is the same amount.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
82, 84. Some nights it's a crap game. And, you know, they'll just come back instead of, you know, talking about this. They'll have an Oreo eating contest. Like, we didn't break down anything. We just had conversations. Like, let's have conversations about, you know, whatever. I obviously, around the Olympics, it's always... you know, the women's program, it's a sensitive one because some people wrote up about it that it's the women's, you know, maybe should not be in because Canada and USA, we already know we're going to be the final. Mm-hmm. And we took that and had a bunch of different layers to it, but we don't give the women in Canada and United States enough credit for how much they've brought their countries to that next level and all the people involved. Like it is, and we only look at the other side of it. So we had these, you know, yeah, Mary Philippine scored some amazing goals. And, you know, Hillary Knight is an amazing talent. And there was all these moments in the tournament. Well, you don't have to break them down. Everyone kind of saw them now. And today they get broken down 800 times by everybody. So we just had conversations. And it was great. Went over well.
Where did you do that?
No one went to China. So we did it in Toronto. Okay. So it was real fun watching the Olympics because we were in Toronto, but the games were on China time. So right. The games were at 11 p.m., 3:30 a.m.,
yeah, yeah.
And then 8 a.m., and then we were on at noon, and then they replayed it again at night. So the sleeping was nap here, nap there.
Russ, you knew me in my blurry days. I could have handled that.
Yeah,
11 until 8 in the morning. That would have been fine. No problem. How much say, PJ, do you have in that broadcast, in that, because you talk about what you know, you didn't want to do. We don't want the, you know, the cookie cutter breaking the game down, the plays and all that stuff. And do you get a bunch of say when you do that as a broadcaster, or do they sit you down and go script here, this, that, the other thing?
I think too many do. You know, you got to follow the script. And I think the best times are when things go off the rails a little and breaks into that conversation. Mm-hmm. Right. There's only so many times we can talk about breaking down a play. I mean, it's a play, but I'd rather take a play and have. Why I love the NFL is a little bit with the way they break things down. They have a white coach, a black running back, a white quarterback, every different position, different eyes, different upbringings. And it's kind of like, here's a play. And they all kind of are talking about it, you know, how it kind of, you know, they get fired up. No, you're wrong. You're this right. And you're at home being like, hey, you're hopping into the conversation, even though you're not. But I think hockey is kind of, we're missing a little bit of what all those other sports have. And it's we're missing that, you know, even our star players who are the craziest talents in the world and very humble. We're missing a little bit of that, what makes football and basketball special. And I think if anyone does it in hockey, has a little
personality,
moxie or whatever, it almost gets taken, you know, oh, you're going against the grain, you know, and you get kind of shooed. And so
they had to tell Ovechkin, they were telling Ovechkin when in his first few years, he was celebrating too much, you know, and you watch him on the bench and his teammates score and he's jumping up and down and hugging these. That's just who he is. He wasn't pretending to be anybody else, but who was it? Matt Pettinger played with him, and he said he jumped on the ref after he scored a goal. And they went, "You can't do that."
Can't.
Yeah, that's a little heavy. Yeah.
Well, I think, you know what, we had people in Canada that had a voice for a long time, and they were amazing at what they did. And you know what? It's kind of, it was for the times, but the times have changed. And mm-hmm. I think we have to celebrate those people mm-hmm. and what they're. Ovechkin loves hockey.
Yeah,
like he. And like you said, he loves those moments and gets caught up in those moments. So he drops the stick and pretends it's on fire. Good.
Yeah, right.
I love it. I do.
Yeah.
I love it.
The celebration, especially, listen, I know how hard it is to score. Not scoring.
Hey, your five celebrations were unbelievable.
Oh, my God.
I don't want to bring up playoffs. I don't want to bring up playoffs.
Yeah.
I could sell. So 1 year. So I'm the fourth line, I'm in Boston. And back then, the fourth line never played. Like my career started off with Colin Campbell as the coach in New York. And he was awesome. Like fourth line, he loved that style of hockey. He put us on every now and then, you know. And when the Leafs came to town, you know, Washington had Dale Hunter, you know, Domi and Chris King was in Toronto. A bunch of our division had like a bunch of those guys. And those games got that way a little bit more animosity in them. And then John Muckler took over and John didn't like young guys or the fourth line. So I was a young guy on the fourth line.
Right.
So for a couple of years, I just kind of hung out and ate hot dogs with the backup goalie and trainer. And then, you know, I get into this bouncing around a couple, I end up in Boston and everyone says, you know, you set the bar, you know, if you get one, they're going to want two. You want two, they want four. So I kept it at one every year. You know? I didn't want to overdo it.
You wouldn't want to complicate it. Yeah.
No. So we're in Boston and I haven't scored all year and it's towards the tail end. And the fourth line, we go there and the times you draw penalties, right? You do something, the other guy would sucker you back. You do it to try and get your team on the board or whatever. And that's some teams like Colin Campbell would throw our fourth line out there to give us a little bit of, you know, congratulations, we're up 5-1.
Yeah.
Whereas other coaches were, I want to keep my big boys happy. And this was Robbie Fatorik. He wanted to keep Joe Thornton happy. Our Bill Guerin's happy. Our Glenn Murray's happy. So he always kept putting the guys out there chasing down these milestones for points or whatever. He's like, if I lose the fourth line, who cares? I have the other three lines that are happy getting their points.
Right.
But the guys were like, Stalker, stay out there. And I'm like, I can't stay out there. Robbie's calling me over the bench. And Joe Thornton's like, Stalker, come on the ice with us. And the line was cool. Glenn Murray, Mike Knubel, and Joe Thornton, which at the time was a powerhouse in the East. And they're like, come on with us. And I'm like, I can't go on. So I sit on the
bench. That's unreal.
Yeah. And then Joe's like, Robbie yells down at me, says, I can't go. Joe yells at him and says, we got him. And he tells Mike to stay there. And I go on the ice. And all he says is, Stalker, keep your stick on the ice. And I'm like, dude, if I played with, like, I had about three chances to score on that power play. If I played with some talent, I probably would have had maybe 7 years over. Seven goals over the 7 years instead of the five.
We have jacked it up by two.
Right? Yeah. Anyways, I end up scoring on the power play.
That's awesome.
And I get all excited and I go to celebrate and Glenn Murray grabs me and he goes, whatever you do, just stay. Don't make a sound. Don't do anything. Pretend you've been here like 40 times this year.
Yeah.
I've been here fucking once, Muzz. Once this year, once last year, once the year before. This is my moment.
Yeah, give me a break.
I'm riding the stick.
Get out of the way.
Yeah.
He's holding me and I was
like, oh, that's the best.
Oh, man. It was like, that was it. And that's
good for you for having the balls to do that. Because, fuck, I don't know. Like, coaches just had such power over
power
us.
Back then. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Who's your strongest to you, Russ? Because I hear you talk about when you started in Toronto that there was some tough, like there was, well, not only that, the veterans had a lot of power over the young guys back then as well.
Burnsy was brutal because I had him in his first 4 years. So he was tough. I've heard from so many guys, he got better every year and every contract and the insecurities of being a young coach. He was a prick to us. And obviously you liked a couple guys like Corse and Keener and Chelly, but he was tough on a lot of guys. So anyways, I couldn't even imagine if he said, Russ, you're not moving. I would be still sitting on the bench. Yes. I just couldn't imagine going against him. Like that, I congratulate you for going out on the bench, even with the players saying, come on, come on. I mean, you're really, that's a tough decision. Thank God you scored.
Yeah, I know. I got the puck back here somewhere if you guys want to see it.
There's a stack of five right behind your... I see one,
actually,
two, three.
Funny story. Gretz and I was the youngest guy on the team my first year in New York. I was coming out of St. Francis Xavier University in Nova Scotia. Canadian University, and I was defense pretty much my entire life until my last year of junior, and I ended up playing kind of half the year as forward. And the next year I'm going to play university hockey. And I said, the only way I'm going to go is if I can play forward. So it was my first real year and a half as playing as a forward. And I go from Santa Fe to the next year playing with the New York Rangers.
Wow.
It was so surreal. Like it was crazy. And I'm just in a room with I didn't really watch a ton of hockey growing up. My brother loved hockey. He'd go to the Canadiens practices. He had the autographs, the hockey cards. We had magazines. You know, the only time I'd follow up on hockey is when I was on the toilet. That or read the back of the shampoo bottle. We weren't able to play Swipe Bird or these kids don't even know how easy they have it today.
Or a National Geographic. That's about 5 years old.
That's about it. Anyways, so the next year I'm with all these guys and playing against these guys that I remember seeing in the magazines. And it was crazy. I was on the 97 Rangers, which was pretty much like an 85 NHL all-star team. Mm-hmm. They just brought them all. Like we had Gretz was our first line center. Pat LaFontaine was our second line center. We had, you know, Nedved. We had Adam Graves, Buka Boom Boom, Driver, Richter, Leach, Kevin Stevens. Our team was crazy. Like it was awesome. But we only had like five guys in our 20s. But anyways, Gretz was in the room and anything Gretz did, you know, yes, Mr. Gretzky, that's funny. You know,
and we've all fake laughed him. We get it.
But my first, so.
Here we go.
Oh,
Gretz. I just moved this here. Did we just lose that there?
No, you're good. You're okay. Good, man.
So I'm there. I just moved it there.
Don't
so
touch any buttons.
Gretz buys Hespler. You guys remember Gretz bought into hockey equipment?
Yeah.
So you got, we've already gone over my stats. We don't have to keep doing it. So obviously I struggled enough. I struggled enough as a first year forward trying to get out there and trying to make anything happen. And so I finally had a stick that kind of worked, but then Gretz comes to me and is like, hey kid, you're going to use a Hespler. And I'm like, oh, goal. You guys know where this is going. I scored a goal that year with a Gretzky blade.
Wow.
And it's a Hespler. I mean, I don't know how the hell this guy scored many goals with this blade.
Like he had the ugliest curve ever.
Yeah.
And the lie, right? The lie was weird too.
Everything about his stick was like, I was like, I picked it up. I'm like, how does he use this thing? It's awful.
Yeah.
I thought he was going to come to you and say, we're going to pay you not to use it.
I scored. Sherwood. I scored with it. Yeah. And it's in my basement now.
Sherwood's going to give you $100,000 to use Hespler.
First time ever. Other companies are paying you to use yet another company.
That's funny, man. I got to ask you, you know, you're so full of life. Rusty has said a number of times on the show that one of the problems with kids when they break into the NHL is they all think they should be a first liner, you know, or most of them. And that's the biggest problem that a lot of teams have, particularly in amateur hockey. Russ, when you said it, you talk about being a fourth liner, you make fun of it and all that, but it sounds like you had your head around it right from the beginning. What was your sort of strategy to stay in the NHL? Your mantra, mentors, You obviously ate this role up that you were and had a lot of fun doing it. So walk us through that because it's tough on a fourth liner.
I was really lucky, like really, 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 really lucky. And I mean, Russ, same thing. How many kids play this sport? And we're so, I think the one thing with hockey players, you find out the people around once you get pro, you realize it. Growing up, everyone that makes it to the NHL is almost the best where they're coming from. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Except for me, but there are a lot of guys are the best of the best. And it's, you know, it's almost like a pyramid as you keep going up, you're the best kid in Sweden, best kid here, best kid there. But, and then you all get to the National Hockey League and then you get like, hey, okay, you're the best there. So just as I'm, cause I use Gretz's Hespler, I'm out the shit on him here for a sec. So, you know, we're my first year and I'm hardly playing. And I used to play a bunch in everywhere else I've been. And now I get to my first year pro, which is, I'm so excited. And now I'm Gretz is our first line centerman. And whenever they call the fourth line up, they'd be, you know, Stalker. And I'd go to get ready and I haven't played back then. You get one two shifts a period. I put water on myself. I get all ready. I go to stand up. And if Gretz wanted to go on the ice, he would just stand up. He would not say a word, would not do anything. He would just stand up and that'd be okay. He's ready to go.
Yeah.
But I didn't know that the first couple of times. Uh-oh. So it took a couple of veterans around you.
Sit down and dry off.
And then the best part was the guys used to do this all the time. So I'd get excited because I never drank coffee when I was young. I was just high energy. But again, I'm so used to playing everywhere else that I'm getting ready to get on. And I get the tap on, Stalker, your line's up. I get up, but Gretz is standing there. And then it's like, oh, fuck, sit back down, kid. And now it's like 5-2. Now there's maybe a chance of a shift. And I go to Stalker, your line up. And then, I go to get excited. And then Gretz stands up. So so it started continuing into, first of all, there's always, I'm going to go back to the answer to the question about the, I used to get excited about getting a shift and getting ready. And I went through this little process because I haven't played. My legs are, people think it's been 7 minutes on the scoreboard. That could be a half hour.
Sure.
Right. So it's so long. You try and get ready, sit still, don't do anything. Then sprint as hard as you can for 45 seconds. And then, that's the life as a fourth liner. And I wasn't used to that. And the biggest thing is getting your ego in check to do that. And luckily I had some great veterans around me, but every time Stalker, you're up, I was, mental, let's go, I'm going to kick some ass. And then Gretz would stand up. So we're going like, this is a few months into it. And then what they started doing is some veterans on my team would start tapping me on the back. Colin Campbell would come by and kind of tap you like you're up, tap the back, Stalker, touch your back, your helmet or your shoulder, Stalker, you're up. Yeah. So now the guys started doing it to me on the bench. So I have backup goalies doing it to me. Darren Langdon, who is one of my favorite human beings ever, keeps touching me on the back like Stock, and he's my line mate. So he watched me do the whole water process, and then I'd go to get ready, and they're both sitting down, and coach would look down at me and say, laugh on 10, your line's up. And I'm like, oh shit, sit back down. They're doing it. I'd do this to myself 8 times a period because I didn't know when it was them or not them. Now my equipment's completely soaked. Yeah. And we're in Pittsburgh. And we're in Pittsburgh one night, and Darren Kasparaitis keeps knocking the helmet off Gretz. Not crazy dirty, but just being an ass, like pushing his helmet forward, pushing it forward. So it's coming over Gretz's eyes. And Gretz pretty much used that old like salad bowl. There was like nothing in it.
The Jofa.
Nothing to it. And so Colin Campbell goes, Gretzky, Sundstrom, Stark. And I'm like, not this fucking time. No way. Like, they even have the coach in on it now.
Oh, no.
So they're like, I look at Langer, and Langer's like, oh, you're up. And I'm like, yeah. Screw you. You're up, asshole.
Yeah.
Like about 12 seconds, 15 seconds go by. Gretzky, Sundstrom, Stark. And I look down again. I look over. I'm like, no fucking way. I'm not
falling for it.
Colin Campbell comes right over to me and looks down at me and goes, Gretzky, Sundstrom, Stark. Let's go.
Nice.
I get my first shift ever with Wayne. And we're playing against Pittsburgh, and it's not the far offside dot. And they come out with Jagr, Francis, Darren Kasparis was on the right D. So I went to the right. Left D, so I went to the right wing to be lined up against him. And Gretz looks over at me before we're about to take the face off, bends down and puts a stick on his knees and looks over in my direction and says, no penalties. And I'm like, dude, I only have one skill set. You just took it away from me.
Yeah, right.
So I'm lined up against Ron Francis, and Ron looks up down at me and goes, hey, kid, if you ever want to play with this guy again, I suggest you take no penalties. So I just like instantly like, what do I do now?
Now you got two Hall of Famers.
Anyways, one shift and I was, I can't play. Gretz and I, we didn't have the same styles. So I asked the coach.
Same stick though. Again.
Yeah. Same stick. Yeah. Now it's in my basement. So that was so a long, good. Long way of saying, you know what? Everyone comes in with the egos, and the ones that are able to survive are the ones that are able to adapt.
Yes.
The best ones are the ones that are able to adapt and understand that you all have the common goal. You all want to win, but sometimes you have to do things a little bit different for a team to be successful. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the thing that's lost a little bit with today's game, the way we've gotten rid of some of those veteran presence from teams and given the keys to the city to a 20-year-old, here's an 8-year contract and a whole bunch of money, and now you have more power than anybody else in the organization. And I think that's where we're kind of, you need those Rick Tockets, Kevin Stevens, those Buka Booms, Ulf Samuelsons, the Adam Graves, you know, Keith Primos, the guys that grab you by the ear and say, hey, moron. Or take you to a lunch and be sit you down and be like, and I think, listen, there's a time and a place for everything. You have to learn the time and the place.
Yeah.
And that's the one thing that kids, well, they are kids, man. They're 18, 19. They don't get, and I don't blame them, because up until that stage, they were the guy. Mm-hmm. And the ones that aren't successful are the ones that never learn to adapt.
Right.
Bingo.
You know, kids these days, right? Anyone who's a parent, and you are, Russ is, I am.
I have four. Yeah. I have my, I like two of them.
My old man used to say, PJ, there were four of us. And my old man used to say, you kids need to know something. Children are highly, highly overrated. Okay. They're highly overrated. I love my dad. What's the story about you and Gretz and this new car thing or something? I was trying to find this thing and I went, what? He forced you to get a new car or something? What is it?
This is just a shit on Gretz Fest right now. So yeah. So I'm at St. Francis Xavier, and I sign in the summer with the Rangers organization.
Yep.
And well, I have to get to camp, right? We're going to Vermont. I've never been drafted. I have no idea what's going on. My brother's younger than me. He was a better hockey player, and he probably would have been going to places. But it was me, and I didn't really have in my group of buddies, no one had really been drafted. So I had no idea where it was. I had an NHL, I had a three-way deal, NHL, American League, East Coast. Actually, there was a sublet underneath that. I actually had the Mexican League put in because that's what they thought I was going to play. So I have to go. Actually, sub part of this story. I buy my mom's car off there for like $1,000. It's an old Taurus. There's no paint on the three hoods.
Oh, no.
I think, knowing my shitness, that I'm going to start off in the East Coast. And the East Coast was $18,000 a year. I'm not buying myself a new car at 18. And that's only for 6 months, right?
Right.
So the funny thing is, on the way driving down, I go to the border and the guy's like, where are you going? I'm like, man, I'm going to the Rangers camp. He's like, oh, that's it's great. Are you going to make the Rangers? I'm like, no, I'm not going to make the Rangers. He's like, oh, where are you going to play? He goes, I don't know. Where's the American League team? I say, Hartford. He's like, going to make Hartford? I goes, I doubt that. So
Anthony Robbins. Right.
Where are you going? So I mentioned Charlotte was the East Coast team. It goes awesome. Do you have your working visa? And I'm like,
tilt.
And back then we had no cell phones. We had to turn around, go back home, and you know, I get it faxed. And anyways, I drive down the next day. So I missed the first day of testing. And the first day of testing is all the younger guys and in the American Hockey League guys and draft picks. And then day two of testing is the NHL guys. The Russ Cortinals walk in with their, you know, their fancy cappuccinos and stuff. The other guys are all sharing some coffee blend that they found out in the hallway. Russ has his soy milk latte with a dust of cinnamon. And he's got like this little sweat jacket on. Doesn't even have to do the test. So I get in there. Now I'm the last name. So they add me into Gretzky's group. And this is where it all kind of started. And the first thing was a bench press test. And whatever the weight was, you had to do it as many times as you can. So I go and do it. And I'm so nervous because Wayne really hasn't said anything to me yet. It was it. It was the first day I've ever met him. And it kind of, I put in his group, there's three of us, and it's just kind of do the bench press. I get up, you got the lactic acid. You can't breathe. I'm so nervous. I don't know if it's good. I don't know if it's bad. I feel like everyone's looking at me, but nobody's looking at me. And then I look, Gretz looks over me and taps me on the leg and goes, kid, that was really good. I'm like, thank you, sir. And he's like, can you do mine?
That's funny. No.
So I'm like, So anyways, I of course I didn't, but it started that day. He was just super funny and great because I was the young guy. So I pull in now. I get sent down to the American Hockey League. I play.
How old are you at this time, PJ?
I'm 22.
Okay.
So thanks. I come in at 1 year at St. FX. I played junior until 20.
Yeah.
1 year at St. FX and then Rangers.
Gotcha.
And then I start off in the American Hockey League, which is Hartford. I get called up. Now I get called up again. I'm driving into the, we had Rye Playland was a practice area. So I have my mom's old Taurus, which is probably, I don't know, 8 years old. The right window, if it went down, you'd have to grab both hands to pull it back up. Right?
Oh no.
And I had one knob that was the radio, the air conditioning, the heat, if that fell to the ground, you were stuck on whatever you had for the next little bit. I had my Garth Brooks double live he had album, and I pull in like I'm the man. I got called up to the Rangers. I come into Rye Playland, and here I am. I pull in my car. I got like track suits, and like I have no team luggage either. It's just
track suits,
shitty old bags and stuff, and like my old Navy sweatsuit that the only thing I could afford at that time. And I pull in, and the guy's like, "Where are you going?" I'm like, "I'm here to play with the Rangers."
No way.
He just looks at me. I'm like, yeah, sure you are, kid. Again, no cell phones. So he has to like call a landline. So I'm nervous because I can't get in. They're not going to let me in. And this guy's just looking at my shitbox car and not letting me in. He finally lets me in. I drive into Rye Playland, and there it is. It's like this awakening moment where I'm in a Taurus with no paint, and the car, team masseuse back then had a Porsche, a red Porsche. It was, Gretzky. There was Beamers, you name it, Mercedes, every high-end car was in that lot. And then there was a Taurus. So the year goes on, and back then we practiced in Rye Playland. When we had to get downtown the day of a game, they give a hotel downtown. So you wouldn't have to deal with the 5 o'clock traffic. So whoever wanted to go down, you got a room. So I was single kid in New York. I'm going to New York every day, man. So guys would sometimes hop in the car with me because their family would come down for the game time instead of having two cars. So I'd have a car of Kevin Stevens, Darren Langdon, Todd Hervey, whoever. And we have to drive through the fancy streets of Westchester. Uh-huh. And as we'd be driving through, the guys would like start to sit down in their... So no one could see them at the red lights. You know, they're ducking down like this. And then like we'd pull up to a car at a red light and they'd just be like gone. They're like under the seat. They're so down funny. Like this. I just rolled the window one down into the car beside me. I got Rangers in the car. I got Rangers in my car. So anyways, everyone just hated me. The year ended. So my Taurus, which all the guys called the clitoris.
Okay. Yeah.
Yep. Gretz comes to me at the end of the year and says, "Listen, kid." Yes, Mr. Gretzky. He's not only you embarrassing yourself by driving that car, you're embarrassing everybody on this team by driving that car. And not only you embarrassing everybody on the team by driving this car, you're embarrassing everyone in the fucking league by driving that car. Do not come back next year with that car.
Oh, that's so funny, man.
Call my brother quickly. Hey, Dino, you just got yourself a car.
Yeah.
Went out right away and got a 4Runner.
That was step up there.
CD player, air conditioning.
Hey, when you played for the Rangers, so I played briefly the year before you got there. Did the media guy give you the get out of jail free cards? Those little
cop cards?
Cop cards. Like you had three of them, right? From three different counties or something?
It's
a true story.
I want to hear this, man.
It's not a get out of jail. It's if you're ever in trouble, call this number type of thing. That's
but he what told was. Me, if you get pulled over by the cops, just hand him this card. He's going to keep it, and you'll get another one next year, but you get one chance of getting out of trouble.
Well, so I needed like eight of them.
I was going to say,
home, Sylvain Blouin and Danny Cloutier, the three of us are in a cab coming home from downtown New York City. The younger guys weren't allowed to live in New York. He had to live out in Westchester. And we're driving home and Danny Cloutier is in the front right seat and Sylvain Blouin is behind him and I'm on the left. And we've had a couple too many. And the couple too many were probably the 22nd, 23rd and 24th at that time. Danny's in the front seat and Klutsch is just flicking his ear for the hour ride home the entire time, just smacking him in the head. And because there's only a small glassing there, Klutsch couldn't turn around and get him. So we finally get back to our hotel and Klutsch gets out and just runs out. It says, sucker, you guys pay it, and takes off. He said, use different words, but he ran into we had a back hotel lobby because people that lived at the hotel where we were living, you had a back entrance. So Klutch and I, sorry, me and Sylvain Blouin pay the bill and we go in, we're talking and we get in and we walk into this back lobby and all of a sudden, boom, Danny Cloutier hits Sylvain Blouin with one of those potted trees that that are there. And then, of course, three guys that have had too much to drink end up taking the trees and having sword fights.
Like, oh, no.
We're not. I'm not one of my proudest moments. And I hope my kids don't listen to this because they're going to get. Yeah, that did it. Yeah. So we go into the rink the next day. Hey, guys, how are you? Good. Coach wants to see you.
Uh-oh.
Go in the back. Yeah. How was your night? Great. Nothing.
Nothing to report here.
Nothing to report.
Sword fighting with trees.
Pops in a video from the hotel lobby camera system.
No.
The three. No. Not only that, the best part is, you know how coordinated you think you are at the end of a night?
Yeah.
We were doing cartwheels and ninja rolls and hitting, and he just looks at us and we're like,
fuck.
Can I use my card now?
Yeah. And my checkbook.
Yeah.
Fuck. Mike Keane, I was playing in Montreal and we were in Calgary every year, right around New Year's. So the big in the Westin, they had the big Christmas tree in the lobby.
Right.
And he and Shane Corson thought it would be a good idea to take it up the fire escape and knock on everybody's room. So it's 3 o'clock in the morning. You hear a knock. We're all just getting back from the bars. And so you open your door and the little redheaded Keener ran into our room and it would fit in. And then poof, the branches would all explode open.
It opened.
And all the decorations and needles are going everywhere. And then he'd get up on your bed, turn it around, and then he'd have to squeeze it out the door. He did this every guy who answered his door. The tree went into his room. Well, he takes it downstairs, and he's trying to put it back in the holder like nothing happened to the tree. It's destroyed. And the lady at the desk is on the phone with Pat Burns, he's not saying nice things to her like, if you call my coach and he's on speaker, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. And he's swearing and stuff. And the next day, Burns, oh my God, he was so freaking pissed off because Keener was his boy. He loved Keener. And Keener tried to deny it. And he goes, Keener, I was on the fucking phone. I heard everything you said to that lady. Don't fucking lie to me.
Oh, that's funny.
You're paying $1,500 for the tree, and you're lucky I don't send you to the minors.
Thank the Lord, no phones, eh? Phones back then. Innocent fun, but it was dumb fun. But
to your point where you think you're hammered and you think you're coordinated and you're going to get away with it or whatever. Oh, my God.
Yeah, or it's like. It's like being blasted and then thinking you can dance the bar with the overbite going, you know, it's just whatever happened to you guys just to putting like shaving cream on the guy's phone, this kind of accelerated to getting, bring the trees into the hotel room.
There's before every game, there is a power play meeting and then there's a penalty killing meeting.
Yeah.
Everyone on every team I was in on, was part of those meetings. Me and the backup goalie and one trainer weren't invited into those stupid meetings. So I'm like, you think, even in the American Hockey League, where I thought I'd play a little bit more. No, PG, you just go kick the soccer ball. You just go in the hall, PJ. So, you think you're going to do that? What would I do? I would tape everyone, you know, I told you saw my stick that I played with. I thought it said Gretzky, so it would help me.
Sure.
Didn't help a ton. But everyone else put so much time and effort into their sticks. They'd take them off. They'd retape them. Well, I'd see them go into their meetings and me not get invited in. I'd untape them, cut the blade in half, and retape them. I'd retape them back up.
I never heard of that. That's awesome. Yeah.
So the ones that the stickers, these are the one pieces, but they had the wood ones used to have a little sticker around the bottom.
A little decorative
wrap.
Wrap, yeah.
Yeah, so I'd cut them like 3/4 through. And the guys would bring like three sticks out to practice, walk out, and the first thing you'd do would be joking with a buddy and go to tee up a slap shot. There was like 18 broken sticks in it, and everyone just looking. I'd sew guys' pants together. I nailed their shoes to the wooden desk. I put the powder in the post game. Guys are all ready. They got a big date night. I'd fill the hair dryer up with powder. You come out and you just put it on and all over you.
Hey, PJ, during the skills competition in Vancouver, they put out Gino for the hardest shot, Gino Ogic, and he sawed all four of his sticks just to the end on that little tape, and then, you know, put it over, and Gino went out, so you skate as hard as you can and shoot, right?
And no helmets on either, helmets,
and it's full of fans. Yeah, they invite the fans, and Gino poof falls right on his face. Comes over and goes, "Fucking Courtnell," and then grabs his other stick, and they're like, "Come on, Gino, come on!" Boom again, and they're he did awesome. four sticks.
God, I could go on all day about this thing. I hope our laughing. I'm always worried, Russ. Our laughing destroys the guy's line. You know, we talk so much, we laugh so hard. When you look back, PJ, and this has been fantastic, at all your days in hockey, you got a top two, you got a top three, you got a top story. What's the story about gum all over the ice? What's that all about?
That's a long, how much time do we have here? I'll give Neil Cole's notes version.
Okay.
So again, Muckler's the coach, didn't like fourth line and, young guys. I'm a fourth line player, any young guy. So I'm not playing. So we're playing the Islanders, and it's like, again, we're 97, 98. We have an all-star team in the NHL, but they're all at the tail end of their careers. Like, they're all the biggest, amazing names of hockey. We wish we had the legs we had maybe from a couple years earlier. So we're pretty much about to be eliminated by the New York Islanders. So there's no salary cap, and the Rangers were spending way more than everybody else. Again, our first two centermen were Gretz and Patty LaFontaine. So we're playing the Islanders, and if the Islanders pretty much beat us this night, we're eliminated. There's like eight games left or six games left, and we're on do or die every night. So they get up to make it 3-0 with like 3 minutes left to go in the game. And, you know, the building, Islanders, Rangers, Russ, how loud is that?
It's crazy.
It's one of the best atmospheres in sports, like, especially back then. And it was just so loud and awesome. Even though I was on the losing end, it's the building was awesome. So 3-0, they score, their team calls there's a timeout call. So Gretz jumps on the ice and he gets ready to, you know, comes back to see the coach, and goes to Muckler, and Mucky called the timeout. Let's go. And Muckler's like, I didn't call a timeout. So then Gretz looks down and looks at the assistant coaches, and he realizes it's their team that's called the timeout. So Gretz goes over to their bench, and nobody else can really do this. But Gretz goes into kind of like their timeout area and kind of says, "Hey guys, what the fuck?" And Gretz kind of like, the guys just look up and like with their eyes point up to, it was Mike Milbury, the coach. And Mike is sitting there kind of like, I always bug him about this. He says he didn't want the guys to blow a 3-0 lead. And Mike is actually sitting there, arms crossed, taking this whole thing in. Like, he's just like,
We got you.
We got you. And it was, again, the building was rocking and everything. And Gretz comes back to our bench again and goes, they called it. Mucks, I'm about to break all the swearing penalties you have on this thing. So sorry about that. But
yeah, that's all right. Yeah.
Okay. So Gretz tells Muck, Muck's like, "You want to play that game? You want to play that fucking game? Stalker, get your lineup. Stalker, get your lineup. I haven't been on the ice in 2.5 hours. Stalker, get your lineup." So you go, and the Islanders bench, there's two doors, right? The forward and the defense. But where the forward one is, there's actually the bench goes past the door, and there's a spot for like two people. Okay. Right. I've been sitting there for like 4 hours. After the 8 minute mark of the first period, I didn't get another shift. So now there's 3 minutes left, and people are like, "Well, that's, you know, 20 minutes. No, that's like 3 hours later.
Sure.
And he's like, "Stalker, your line's up." "My line's up." So I look at Langer. Langer's like shin pads and skates are pretty much undone. Darren Langen. We had Bill Berg, who did play a little. So Bill was on. And he's like, "Stalker, get your lineup. And I do my water thing, right? I got to water my arms. And I know something's happening. Also, by wetting the jersey, it's harder to hold on. I'm watering my face. I'm waking everything up. I'm, you know, I'm putting tape on my shin pads, didn't have tape on. I'm doing that. I'm getting all ready. And this is all within 30 seconds. Langer's half-tied a skate and he couldn't cross over anyway. So that didn't really matter. So they throw us out there and to come back at us, they put their top line on, which is Zygmunt Palfy, Tchaikovsky, Trevor Linden, JJ Daniel, and a young Zdeno Chara. And they drop the puck and I go, I don't know what to do. Everyone's swearing and yelling. I'm the last person I've fought in hockey. I've never really done anything really violent. This moment here, I just slashed Trevor Linden as hard as I can. The problem is my hand. Okay. I couldn't get my hand all the way down in my glove. The problem was in the NHL, we have an abundance of two things when I played hockey tape and Bazooka Joe gum. Okay. So every night I'm done around the 8 minute mark of the first period. So I have to keep, I have ADD, ADHD, I have YMCA, I have everything. So I'm trying to keep myself,
YMCA.
I'm trying to keep myself kind of, you know, during the game, I spy with my little eye with the trainer or the backup goalie. I play, you know, a fun one. People listening, you guys can all thank me later, is blackjack. So you, whatever the clock lands on, the last number is your number. And then the next time there's a whistle, it's another person. And each other.
That's fucking a hell of a brilliant
deal. Each has to be the house, so you have to hit on 16. Right, so you'll be losing 5-1 and there'll be a whistle and three more at the other end, like, oh man. Everyone looks down
he
and
busted.
Like, so this particular night, it's Darren Langdon in the two-man spot sitting there, and Langer and I decided to fill my glove up with Bazooka Joes. And Bazooka Joes came in three colors back then. It was like a red, a pink, and a purple.
Right.
So I filled my entire glove up with it's not up here. It's somewhere in the room. But I filled the entire glove up with Bazooka Joes. And all we were doing, $20 a guess. I'd pull a Bazooka Joe out and Langer would guess one of the three colors.
No way.
Yeah. So
no purple. Way.
That's red. You owe me 20. I pulled out this is the entire third period. Yeah. And unless they were purple, the purple ones you'd chew because that's the only one. But after 13 seconds, your jaw would lock up because there was nothing to them. So this particular night, he's like, Stalker, get your lineup. I quickly take my glove off and I'm shaking all the Bazooka Joes out of my gum. Like the whole area is like full of spit and Bazooka Joe gums. So we jump on the ice and I go to slash Trevor Linden. The problem is I couldn't get two of my fingers into my gloves because they still had gums stuck in
so funny, man.
Finger holes. So I slash Trevor, but it looks violent, but it's like a whiff because I hardly touch him because I can't hold on to my stick. It was my bottom hand. So Linden looks at me and goes, what are you doing, kid? So I quickly go to slash him again, but it's like a wet noodle. And it's like, anyways, YouTube Rangers Islanders brawl. It ended up being Billy Berg fought. I had Tchaikovsky, and it was just Darren, our goalie Cloutier, their goalie came after me. And then Danny Cloutier came in. Their goalie was Tommy Salo, jumped on Tommy Salo, and our goalie then challenging their bench. And it was just a big free for all. All of our equipment gets kicked around and everything. And they got to start the game back up now. And the faceoff's down at our end. And by the time they go to start it back up, the other backup goalie that's in now had to like tap his stick down because they picked up all the gloves, but there was Bazooka Joe gloves, gums, because my gloves were kicked apart everywhere. There was gums spread out all over the ice.
That was so fucking funny.
That pretty much sums up my career. That's pretty much,
Langer loves to gamble too. I played cards with him when I played with the Rangers. I played in that group at the front of the plane, and Langer, oh my God, he was in there, and he shouldn't have been in there because at that time he's making like 107,000 and everybody playing was making $1 million or more. And Langer was in there just getting freaking pounded.
It's like a week's check in one hand. You know, we'd all sit around and watch the Russ Cornell group play that type of, and you're like, oh my God, like that's, and I shouldn't say this, but I think I look back to when we played Russ. I think everyone says, you know, I was doing radio at the time when Dick Pound came out and said that everyone was, you know, there was too many steroids in hockey, right. And or drugs in hockey. And I'm like, I don't really, I played on four organizations. He's saying the number was up around 50-60%. And I'm like, maybe two to three guys per team in my mind. Mm-hmm. And they were probably the guys in my role, in the fourth line role. Like they were, mm-hmm. That's the only thing I can think of. And I think back when I look back at our career, when we played, I said, if there's any drugs that was a drug, I think alcohol was, we just kill Coors Lights and Bud Lights. Yeah. Like they were going at us. Kill them. Like sure, that was the and in the States it's water. So yeah. It was just, and the other thing was gambling. And I look back to our careers and I it's so funny. I remember the moments because we used to have the ticker in the rinks. The ticker up top in the rink would be, they showed all the basketball scores, the baseball scores. They don't have that anymore. Mm-hmm. So you'd be playing a game and you'd have someone on the bench pretty much shit himself because he just realized the Knicks are losing to the Celtics by 14. it's like me playing. I got blackjack at this, and this guy just lost in basketball over there. And it's just
this guy shoving gum in his glove.
I don't know if this story is true, but Yermo Yager is a big gambler. That is true.
Yeah.
Notorious big gambler. And I don't think it's gone that well for him, especially early in his career. I hope that part's not true, but this story I heard. Before they put the scores up in early days of our careers, they didn't have the ticker up and they didn't have the scores of the games up. And he was playing Monday night in Pittsburgh and he went into the locker room during the game to get his skate fixed, apparently. But he really went in there to see check the score in the football game.
No, he didn't.
Yeah.
Oh, that's didn't.
Now that is a story I can't verify, but I heard that story.
The reason why he left the NHL at that point was because he had to, we're speculating.
He's a notorious big gamma.
Yeah. Yeah. And well, the league knows it was out there that he was in a lot of trouble. Let's not throw sand on, but it is, I think there is, those moments where I remember beside a guy and I was, and I'm making at the time, I think $300,000, which is, crazy amounts of money when you think back and, you have, I'm beside a guy and we're Super Bowl. There's all those props going. And we're having a Super Bowl party and we're, chugging light beer, 900. I'm on my 900th one of those. And you're props on every stupid prop you can bet on. But anyways, they flip the coin and you're all betting. I got $100 on this or $25 on all the props and flips the coin and it goes tails. And I don't want to throw the guy's name out, but he does like a flip. He's so excited. He had $60,000 on a coin toss.
Come on.
Oh my God.
He was a Boston Bruin. That's all I'll give you. He got in a little bit of financial trouble too, but he $60,000 on a coin toss.
Hey, PJ, my son this year, I didn't know you could do this. He bet the over on that national anthem.
I never heard
that.
Yes.
I'm like, what? So he has a friend from school that said he's a techie, works in the industry now. He said, if you're going to make any bet the over. So he tells his teammates, I got an inside scoop on the over under on the national anthem. They're having a team party. And every guy in the team bets the over. Now he's like, oh no, what did I just do? What if we lose? So they put the timer on.
Dad.
And the first 20 seconds, the singer is flying through the song. Right. And he's shitting himself and they're all giving him the stink eye. And then all of a sudden the choir comes on and they slow down and they just start chanting his name like Lot and Lot.
Funny, man.
Yeah. But I'd never heard of such a thing. You can bet the over under.
But how can you, this is one of the ones that I think you can max bet on it. I think you can't go crazy. But my thing is, how wouldn't the singer or anyone in the band let every friend that they know and like, I don't want a million different. Yeah. Like that's an easy one.
Get her on the inside. Bring her in. Yeah.
Total. Like, there's so many of them that
keep it under 2.5 minutes. You're good for 500 here. Yeah.
BJ, I've told this story about drinking beers on the plane because when we flew commercial, no drinking on the plane. Correct. And at least all the teams I played on. So, I'm playing for Dallas Stars. We just freaking went on an awesome road trip out west, and we're flying this crazy way back to Dallas. Like, freaking, we went through a million cities, and Bob Gainey fell asleep in first class, and he wakes up, and the stewardess comes over and says, "Mr. Gainey, would you like your meal now? We've already served dinner, and we've got your meal if you'd like it." He goes, "Yeah. Love my meal." She goes, "What would you like to drink?" And he says, "I'll have a cold beer, please." And she said, there's no beer left. He goes, "Well, can't you just go in the back and get some beer from the back of the plane?" And she goes, "No, all those young guys in the suits and ties, they've drank every beer on the plane."
Good one. Yeah. Good one.
The hockey guys. Oh,
yeah.
The guys in the suits and ties.
I'll tell you what, the over under on how many stories PJ would have was I had it at 38 minutes. Okay. The over under. And I took the over, and I went a ton. PJ Stock, man, this was absolutely great.
Yeah, this is awesome.
Thanks, guys.
So funny. I bet you got a million stories. What's up for you in the future here? What you've got a couple different gigs, but fill us in.
Well, I'm in Montreal right now. So I do, I work for RDS for people from Canada. It's like the French TSN. Right. So it's a lot. It's been a long couple of years because it's a lot of the Canadians.
Yep.
A lot of the Canadians. And it's kind of one of those, you know, it's easy to kind of find the thing that's wrong. Because everyone makes mistakes, and it's a game of mistakes. So you try and find the positive sometimes, but it is fun to play the yin and yang in Montreal just because people are so passionate. You like to twist them a little just to get them going.
Sure.
But it's like, it's been hard to find positive over the last couple of years. They had the playoff run, which was amazing. And I wish the fans were able to be in the building, but they weren't. But then this year they've rewritten history books on how bad they've been. Mm-hmm. So it's been tough. So you friends that are bar owners and everything, it's been tough because no one's out cheering them on, the whole thing. So I'm trying to do as much drinking for the bar owners. I'm here to support. Russ, where'd you go when you were here back in the day?
Where didn't he?
No, but I didn't go to the tourist spots. I didn't go to St. Catherine Street. I went to
I never liked those areas.
St. Laurent. And there was all these cool new bars that were opening up. So I hung out at DeSalvio's. It was an Italian mafia bar that was like a New York loft with fireplaces. It was so freaking cool.
Oh, cool.
Is that where the hairstyle came in?
Yeah, I don't know. Whatever.
Slick back?
Whatever helped whatever helped.
There's the quote. Russ, we've done hundreds of shows.
I'll take the over.
PJ, we got the double. Whatever helped. Whatever helped. Whatever helped. Hey, before you go, do you have anything inside here? A lot of people are asking, what's on a serious side? What's going on with Carey Price? Is he coming back?
There's so many questions with the organization that I don't know. And I don't want to say anything about anyone that's not fair. That's the one thing I hate about the game is the rumor mills and stuff like that. Cause we've all been there, but it's kind of crazy. The crappiness that's been following him. And I just get stuck with there's no honesty. Like about if a guy's hurt, a guy's hurt. Like I understand we've gone to this lower body, upper body thing. Mm-hmm. And it's in football, if you have a hangnail, you have to tell everybody, you know? And I think in hockey, it just leads to speculation because there's no clarity to anything. So you kind of get frustrated and kind of speak out of turn because people are asking and they want to know, but no one knows. So you're like, I think I might've heard this and no one knows the real story, but the Carey Price situation has been interesting. He was supposed to be out a month, September, October, November, December, January, February, we're in March. So, you know, there's a lot of guys that had a lot of injuries that have been questionable. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's tough. I just, it's all of the cloudiness around the Montreal Canadiens has led them to, again, the worst season in team history and really going against the grain, which I'm really excited about getting an Anglophone of hockey, I guess, and Jeff Gordon, which a Boston guy, and then going with Kent Hughes, which was an agent, which just they haven't gone that way. And they're thinking a little bit different because they need to really make some difference, some changes. And I'm excited about the future. It's just going to take some time to get there.
I'm excited about you replacing Russ as a host on this show. That's what I'm excited about.
No kidding.
Hey, let's go golfing together. You, me, Jordan, and 99, or
and bring your phone.
bring a camera crew.
Bring your Jimmy.
We're gonna bust a roll. We're gonna shatter it, man.
Yeah.
PJ Stock, man, this was great. PJ, congratulations, man, on great career, hilarious storyteller, and now that your broadcasting is, I've seen you, man, and I've seen lots, and you're gonna be okay, man.
If Russ keeps sending me some checks from all of his work, we'll both be fine. We'll all be fine. I mean, Russ, when's our turnout on Sherbrooke? We're waiting.
Yeah. Anytime. Sherwood. Anytime.
Yeah.
Open invitation. Just we're closed on Mondays.
I'll just explain to you something about Russ, PJ. We're about the hour 15 mark. Russ made $31,000 selling real estate.
I was going to say, every time his head goes down, he like smiles. It's like,
hit the bid.
Went through. All right.
Okay, brother. Thanks a lot, PJ. Take care, man.
Thanks a ton, guys. Thanks for having me.
See you later. Thanks.
Thanks for being with us. Please be sure to subscribe to The Suspendables today and share the show with your friends and followers. And find out everything you need to know about the show on our brand new website, thesuspendables.com.